Logo Centrifugal Podcast. I'm Chance Lunsford. I'm also Logo Centrifugal. Maybe you're also Logo Centrifugal. While you're figuring that out, let me introduce today's very special guest. I have with me the one and only Elliot Hulse. This is a man who, it's sort of beyond description what he does, because there's so many layers and facets to his essence. But from strong man to father figure to sort of spiritual teacher to all these kinds of things tied into one guy. And, you know, obviously he's very popular on YouTube, he's very popular in other mediums. And one of the things that I really appreciate about you, Elliot, is your ability to inspire people without sugarcoating or being weak about the things that you're talking about. You know, I've watched a bunch of your YouTube videos. People ask you questions, or you have a topic you want to talk about, and here's the pros and here's the cons, and I'm not going to be weak about it or let you be weak in my presence about it. And I love that, because complaining and whining are a couple of the things in my life that just I don't have any patience for or tolerance for, and I just try to always cut them out. But beyond that, I've just been really impressed with your demeanor and the way that you're able to navigate through some of these very serious topics or sticky topics, and be able to do so with an obvious big heart, but without letting that get in the way of communicating what you see as the truth. And with that, there's a lot to you that I didn't touch on there, and I'd like to just have you fill in the gaps about who you are and what you do, and we can run from there.
Well, thank you. I'm a strength coach. At least that's my profession. I played college football, and I decided to pursue a career in fitness. That's rabbit hole goes pretty deep. I mean, it started with exercise when I was 4 years old with my uncle, and he was a martial artist, and he used to train me and my brothers when we were young. But professionally speaking, I turned to training athletes for a living, and I started Strength Camp, which was my strength training service that I ran out of the back of my van in city parks, training people with trash. So, you know, I was young and broke, really, and starting a new family. And I didn't have the money for a gym, but I wanted to, you know, be autonomous. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to work for myself. And so I started Strength Camp, training mostly athletes and men, which were usually the athletes' dads, would meet me at the park, and I'd open up my van and I'd throw out some tires and sleds, and we'd push the van and use sandbags, a lot of homemade stuff. And around the same time, 2007, I started YouTube, I started Strength Camp was the same time YouTube came out. And so I decided to start making YouTube videos of our workouts so that the athletes and my members could share the videos with their friends. And the whole idea was that it would help me get more referrals. And as a result of making those videos, I really didn't expect it or knew what was going to happen, but of course people all over the world were watching them. It's YouTube. I didn't grow up with the internet. So like my kids expect, when you put something online, everybody will see it. I was kind of just trying to put food on the table, and it was one of the easy ways to get referrals. I didn't think really beyond my own city. Long story short, my YouTube videos became very popular. And over the course of a very short period of time, I had reached over a million subscribers on one channel, my Strength Camp channel. It was interesting because as a coach, as a strength coach working with young men, of course we lifted. But there were always questions after the workouts. You know, they would ask me questions about life, you know, girlfriends and parents and school and career. And I enjoyed spending time and speaking with them on those topics. I guess you could say, you know, being a father figure in that way, as I did training with them and teaching them how to flip tires and lift barbells. So I decided to start a second channel. And on that channel, I just went deeper with, and really I just answered the questions that were on the hearts of millions of young men worldwide. And I just told them what I thought, gave it to them straight, spoke from my heart, And people liked it. So I became popular.
Sure. And that's no surprise. You're a very charismatic guy. And I often like to tell people, I lived a pretty dark adolescence and early adulthood. And one of the things, in fact, the very first thing that helped me start to move back into living a life I can be proud of is picking up some kettlebells and focusing on that. And, then I dived deep into the science of exercise and reading all the stories of the greats. And, I had grown up watching World's Strongest Man, and I had grown up watching weightlifting. And there's just that primal visceral sense when you see somebody say, deadlift 1,000 pounds, you just go, oh man, yes.
I got to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And once I started feeling that inside myself, it gave me that solid platform to then begin to build from. And I often tell people the very same proven method to make increases in physical strength across time, which is periodized progressive resistance training, is a fundamental philosophy that can be applied to any other facet of your life. You push hard, you meet a wall, you pull back a little bit, learn your lesson, and you continue that advancement. And I guess that kind of brings me to what I'm very curious about what you're doing, because you say you're a strength coach, and strength has a lot more to do than just physical strength. It's mental strength, it's spiritual strength, it's honor, it's deciding who you want to be and then committing to the things that are required of you to be that person. And I know that through the course of the success and the impact that you've made through your YouTube videos and through Strength Camp and through some of the other events that you take part in, there's a lot of people asking you to help them become more than they are today. And I wonder at what point, or maybe this is not the right question, but at what point did you see yourself transitioning from maybe an emphasis on the body to a stronger emphasis on more of a holistic approach to life?
Well, as any coach would tell you, it begins with me, right? You go into coaching because you discover, wow, I like lifting and I'm pretty good at it. I'm learning about it. I can teach other people about it. Well, I had been doing the same thing as it relates to my soul for many years. I was raised on Long Island in New York, which at the time, as is most suburbs of cities, and particularly New York, it's segregated in a way, meaning that, like, you've got the black community and the black kids, and they hang out at the black table in the commons or in the lunchroom, and then you got white kids, and then there are further divisions, and like all the Jewish kids would hang out here, and then there were Irish kids and the Italian kids, and they all either went to the same synagogue or the same church, and they all kind of knew where you basically belong, even amongst the blacks. I had Haitian friends and Jamaican friends. So growing up in that was a little challenging for me because I am of mixed race. And my parent, and that I can't just say, well, yeah, a black person and a white person got together in America. It wasn't that simple. My parents were from kind of an obscure country in the middle, in Central America. My parents are from Belize. So I think what grew in me was this sense of not knowing who I was, where I belonged, and where I came from. I remember being in fourth grade and the teacher asked me, we were talking about countries of origin, and I raised my hand. I said, my parents are from Belize. And this was like 1987, so I forgive her for her ignorance, but she tried to explain to me that there's no such thing, there's no country. I'm like, wait a second, my parents have been telling me that they came from Belize, and I had to go home and tell my parents that, like, my parents say that where I come from doesn't exist. I think it didn't torment me, but I think it left a question mark for me to begin exploring what happens to be an age-old, timeless, ever-present question for every human being, and that is, who am I? Who am I? Why am I here? What am I about? And so being posed that question, Elliot, what are you? I look Puerto Rican, but I don't speak Spanish. So people are like, dude, that I took that and began to explore. And it led me down various different rabbit holes. I remember going to the library and just probably the only 12-year-old kid that was in love with philosophy. And I found a book by an author, a quantum physicist who also happened to be a spiritualist. He was religious, but he was a scientist. I think it was Rollo May. And he had a book called Man's Search for Himself, something like that. Man's Search for Himself. Who are you? My mind was blown to discover that I'm none of this. This is not who I really am, nor is that image of you who you really are. But on a metaphysical or a quantum physical level, however you want to look at it, we are so much more. And you mentioned earlier that I have a mental aspect, we have an emotional aspect, and we have a spiritual aspect, and it's all one thing. So a lot of what's being played out and a lot of what we're learning and a lot of what we're applying in the physical world are really a mirage it's symbolic. We live in a symbolic world that symbolizes what's actually happening in the heavens, what's happening spiritually. And so when you open up that can of worms, you can really start to see how you can dive into wanting to be the best mental self that you can be, right? It means read books, study, learn from mentors, right? It's all mental, you know, information. And we live in the age of information. It's almost pathological how much information we have right now because it confuses us. So we're hyper-mentally stimulated. In fact, we're typically, I won't use the word manipulated, but you know, we work with this world mostly, we've been taught mostly to work through the physical and the mental. But there's also the emotional aspect of being a human being, which cannot be denied, which is not logical at all. Emotions are not logical. We're not thinking emotions, it's just moving through us. And I learned a lot about that. And then also, if you really want to get to the root of what this is all about, it really is a spiritual battle. It's a spiritual game that we're playing. And when you start moving in that direction, you can't help but think and talk about God. And so it all comes full circle.
You know, I was talking with a friend this morning, and during the course of the exchange, I said, when you accept the fact that you're a conduit for the divine, suddenly the opportunities to serve just open up to you. And I think a lot of what you've just talked about, you know, you have a body and it moves through space, and it's sort of the mechanism by which the processes in your mind or your emotions move through, but it's not the prime mover. It's just the thing that is being moved. And and the things that you think about or talk about shift that body. You know, it changes the way that it looks or functions. It changes the literal direction it heads in. And there's a lot. There's, like you said, it's all kind of tied up together. Mm-hmm. And I guess from that perspective, where do you think... Do you think that there is some sort of systematic approach, or is there some way, because many people think that a spiritual endeavor is very personal, and some people think that a spiritual endeavor should be sort of like a rote prescription that needs to be followed in very specific steps. And then there's a lot of in between. And I guess I'm just wondering, through the process of your own exploration, is there some sort of way that you have been able to glean that you can guide people through the process of their own spiritual awakening, or maybe discovering their divine purpose and then moving in the world in a way that adheres to that?
Well, everything that you and I know, you know, we're born in Western civilization. We basically have the same schooling with minus some differences here. For us to stand here, sit here and have the conversations that we had in as avant-garde a way as we want, we could talk about anything, we had to first learn. We had to go to school. We just didn't know. One of my favorite quotes from Robert Greene's book, Mastery, jazz musician, Charlie Parker, I think. And he says that, Charlie Parker says to a potential musician, first, you got to learn the music. You got to understand all those notes, what you're looking at. And then you got to understand the instrument. You got to where to fit your finger, how to put your finger, how to blow this horn, all these things. You got to learn all that. But then at some point, you got to forget all that shit and just play. And so they kind of work together, where you're never going to get to the point where you're a master jazz musician if you never took the classes, you never learned the instrument, you never learned the music. But you could also get caught up with being too attached to the notes, too attached to music, too attached to the instrument, and then you never play any jazz. So life mastery is a lot the same. And life mastery had been taught to men for thousands of generations through religion, mythology, story. So it's my conviction that God has a promise to human beings. God has a promise to us, and his promise is, I will never leave you without a teacher. I'll never leave you without a book. I'll never leave you without instruction. It's tough out there, but don't worry. I'm sending my messenger. I'm sending my teacher. I'm sending my prophet. And we got here by listening to and honoring those divine manifestations, perfect men, perfect teachers, as far as they could be, and as far as we're willing to accept it. That being said, you can become very attached to the method. You can become very attached to the book. You can be very attached to the teacher. You can become overly attached to the structure. And with an over-attachment to the structure, there's no room for flow. There's no room for music. There's no room for jazz. So it's both.
You know, there's a process that I go through that tells me that I'm in a moment of importance. And a lot of people would describe the sensation as nervousness, that tingling in the gut, the enhanced tactile sensitivity, the sort of ruminating thoughts or repeating echoing thoughts or these kinds of things. And what I've learned is that's like destiny tapping you on the shoulder and saying, here's a moment in time where you have the opportunity to do something, say something, experience something that's going to significantly shift the course of your life. And if you're following that path, you're clearing the path, or you're following a path that other people are going to follow behind you. And not to blow smoke up your ass or anything, but I've had that feeling about this conversation between us. Because I feel like there's a great hunger out there for people who have been misdirected or misled or frankly lied to by a lot of the people that they were hoping to rely upon as reliable sources for personal mastery or for spiritual growth. And they're beginning to see that there's a lot more to the world than maybe the simplistic story they've been told. And sometimes the people that have been telling them those simple stories have been lying to them or have been doing things that are not in keeping with the story they've been told. Hypocrites. And nobody likes that. And of course, you know, and to add to that, you know, we have these two hemispheres. We've got a logical, analytical one, and then we've got one that's more visceral, more instinctual. And there's a reason that they take up the same amount of space in our heads. And I think the modern world has done a disservice to the people who live in it by overly focusing on that left brain analytical thing that just says, focus on the facts, focus on what's right here in front of you and is tangible. And that's all that there is, and that's all that's important. In fact, I have a friend named Roman McClay, and he has written a book called Sanction. And it's 1.2 million words broken into three volumes. And it's essentially going to war with that premise that we should disregard the metaphor, that we should disregard the instinct, the spirit. Not that we should disregard logic as well, but we need to fuse these things back together to become a more complete being. And along those lines, I guess I wonder from your perspective, what are some of the things that you see working with people and getting all the kinds of questions you do? Where are these fulcrums that you see popping up time and again that kind of alert you to these are the areas that I need to focus on right now, because the people who are seeking teaching from me, these are the questions that they continue to ask me over and over again?
Well, first, I had to be very honest with myself and then transparent with the world that I make men strong again. I have three daughters. I married my high school sweetheart. I'm not against women. But right now, men are needing a message of strength. And so, you know, when you say the fulcrum, or that, you know, that point at which we're making contact, I think drawing that distinction between what feeds the soul of a man and what is needed for a woman are completely different. There is a contrast. We are different. And we have different needs, as well as different responsibilities for being our strongest self on this planet. And so that extends into what we ultimately end up doing as men with women, which is family. God married us right from the get-go. It was Adam and Eve. We can't separate one from the other. We can be a monk. There's nothing wrong with that. That's cool. But you can also find salvation together. And what we're seeing in the world right now is that this primal relationship, yin and yang, male and female, you know, night and day, has been completely perverted and turned upside down. And you see it most evidently in the home with the extraordinary amounts of divorce rates. People don't know how to maintain the relationship because we've been lied to about how that relationship is supposed to look. And then our children suffer. So then we have weak fathers, which equals weak boys, which perpetuates a generation after generation of, like, look where we are right now, where young men are committing suicide at a phenomenal rate, a ridiculous rate. I'm just talking about suicide, but we kill ourselves and numb ourselves and destroy ourselves with all kinds of addictions and afflictions, everything from masturbation to playing video games. So I see that as the crux. Making men strong again, but in particular, making men strong again so that they can make strong men, be good fathers, be good husbands. And it's not the way the world has told us. Women have been duped out of their role, and men have been duped out of our role too. It's almost like it says it will be in end times, but everything is topsy-turvy. Men are acting, behaving, thinking like women. We've been chemically castrated, psychologically castrated, and physically castrated. Men don't even, I know men that are, they feel guilt for being men, just their natural instinct as a man. They feel shame just for being a man. And then on the other end, women, who by natural order look to men for leadership, have no leadership in men. They can't trust men. They couldn't trust their dads. And the system is designed in such a way that they're pushed out into the world to be good taxpayers. Strong, independent women, they say. But we're not making children anymore. When we do have children, they cut them out of the belly and they send them to daycare. Women don't cook in the home, care for the home. There's nobody there to care for the home. So both sides. But men go first, and that's why I start with men.
Sure. You know, I have three daughters as well.
And God bless.
and I married my wife coming up on 12 years ago. And, you know, I've gone through a metamorphosis because I don't think I was necessarily misled in the way that a lot of men are being misled today. I was raised as an only child by a super alpha father who is like a literal physical giant and very hyper masculine. And, but I went through a long period of self-destructive behavior, and I've had every addiction in the book, you know, and then I had to go through a lot of work to overcome them. And that's a lot of what my work is about. My public work, this podcast, the book I've written, the things that I write, I'm concerned and I care that people, you know, a lot of the people in my own journey died or went to prison or killed themselves or should, like, might as well have. And it's a deep sadness that I have in my life that I've seen so many people who at one point I cared about are no longer here. And the reason that they did that was because they didn't get the message that they needed, or they didn't heed the message because it was too confusing, or for whatever the reasons are. And to me, growing up as an only child, and I'm in Utah, so I'm surrounded by the Mormons, and I grew up in the Mormon church, and family is of central importance to the Mormon church. And I've carried a lot of things with me from being raised in that church. And that's one of the most important things to me, is that my family comes before anything. And if I have to cut things out of my life, I cut them out of my life. If I have to make sacrifices, I make sacrifices, because it's hypercritical to me that my children have a good example of a father who's willing to do what needs to be done in order to see that their lives are what they could be. And when you talk about the differences between men and women, it's so funny to me that that should even be a conversation that needs to happen. I mean, we've gotten to the point where, you know, there's a certain segment of the population that wants to pretend that biology is not a reality, but that the pretense, some sort of nebulous pretense about the way that men and women are or aren't, is more real than this sort of ongoing process that you can measure and has always been ongoing. It's like, okay, well, it's like shit in one hand and wish in the other and see which fills up first. It's like, come on. And even my daughters, you know, I'll say something, or my daughter will come and tell me a story from school, and, you know, this boy did that, and that's, and then she'll say, well, but that's just how boys are, or that's just how girls are. And it's so obvious to the children. And then they sort of get like washed out of that obvious reality. And I guess, You've been talking about how you see the central focus of your work as sort of reawakening men to the masculine nature, and maybe through the understanding of what the masculine is, gaining a greater understanding of what the feminine is, and then developing stronger relationships so that then they can be a family, be a father, be a man, and lead. And I think you've been very careful too to say, both here and elsewhere, that you're not trying to be derogatory towards women or to belittle them or minimize their role, because as you said, it's both. Mm-hmm. Salvation comes from the unity and the coming together of those two facets. And obviously no man is just 100% hyper masculine on every single one of the traits, and no woman is just the pure feminine. We have this dynamic, and I think that deserves to be recognized too. And your partner should help to fill in some of those gaps that maybe you don't present with. But I guess in that kind of rambling framework, how do you teach the men that you work with where in their lives they are lacking some of these critical features that are like the defining masculine features, and how to develop them you know, across time so that they can see that growth and they can build that foundation and then they can go out into the world and be leaders?
Well, like I said, I'm a strength coach and I see how lifting, training the body transforms mentality. And so, you know, among many other things that we can do, from prayer to fasting to taking on the mindset that is true, it doesn't have to be that metaphysical just yet. You'll probably get there. But if you just begin by taking care of your body, eating the way we were designed to eat, real food, we'll start there. You know, most of what people eat is not actually food. It's chemicals and processed weirdness. And use the body. In the Bible, it says a man will live by the strength of his hands. Keep your hands strong. You should be able to lift. You should be able to move things. And maybe we don't have the kind of, most of our jobs today are all high flying. We sit behind screens. So maybe we don't need our bodies in the same way. But to tap into something primal, to tap into something that has always been of value to men, which is strength. Prior to this, to the way civilization has unfolded to where safety and security is basically a given, men were assessed by their ability to protect. If you can't build, if you can't fight, if you can't protect, if you can't work, you're, well, quite frankly, you're less of a valuable man. We live in a day that is antithesis to nature in many ways that has caused us to deny, forget, and even denigrate our physicality. Begin there. We said before that it's all one thing, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. Well, you could start at any one. If you want to be a monk, start with the spirit and start praying and fasting. But if we're not there yet, which is okay because we live in this world where we're constantly distracted and hypnotized by the Maya, by the lords of this world, then start here. Start with your body.
As I said before, that's what began my process of refinding myself. And, you know, I've never looked back. I'll lift weights. I'll lift barbells and kettlebells and I'll do calisthenics and I'll go on hikes and I'll lift rocks. By the way, I love lifting rocks. Just as an aside, it's probably my favorite thing to pick up. You go on a hike, you pick up a big ass rock and there's just something that's just like, this is what I was made to do. I love this. But that aside, it's just like, once I had that, then all the other pieces started to fall in place for me and I had some spiritual upbringing. And then once I recentered my body, oh, well, here's some truths that I had been denying for myself and now I'm going to welcome them back in. Oh, and now that I've reconciled my body and I've accepted that I have a purpose and here are some of the pieces of my purpose, well, suddenly I'm not so angry about things. Suddenly I'm not so confused and I have more mental space now that my emotions aren't hijacking my thought processes to really ponder, okay, I have these principles. I have this vision. What can I do right now in the world right now that can move me forward? And then you start doing these immediate things and then you go, okay, well, I've got a rhythm. I've got a pretty good understanding of what my day to day needs to look like to achieve this at least baseline of I can be good with myself. But is that good enough or do I want more than that? Well, I'm going to have to look down the road and I'm going to have to try to figure out how do I chunk this out between here and there and then take those steps and actually do them. And I guess for me, and for a lot of people out there, as you've just talked about and kind of elucidated, you got to start with that body, because there's a thing that I tell people to focus on as sort of just a kind of a catch-all, and especially for men, and it is be undeniable. And what I mean by that is your posture, your bearing, your attitude, the way your face looks, the way your body literally looks, and the energy that you exude. When you walk into a room, everybody should look over and look at you and say, there's Elliot. There's Chance. That's a badass dude. I want to go shake his hand. Or if you're a coward or you're a weakling, it's one of those times where it's like, I can't be around this guy because he knows. He sniffed me out already. He looked at me in the eyes, and we had that thing that happens with the eyes, and he knows that there's something about me that is I don't like, and I'm expressing that, and it's eating me. And you can see that in people, and you can also see the opposite, which is being undeniable. You walk into the room, somebody says, "That is Elliot. I got to go shake this guy's hand. I got to go talk to this guy." And then you shake the hand. It's like, oh man, that's a good firm handshake. And the bearing is the same. And I feel like this guy could do anything. And when you find a teacher like that, it makes you want to be like that. And so you say, "Hey, Elliot, what do I need to do to make people feel like that when I walk into the room?" "Well, go pick something up, man." You know? Mm-hmm. And, and from that perspective, I guess, beyond the strength, and I know we keep circling back to that, beyond the physical strength, though, what you've talked about prayer, you've talked about meditation, and I do a lot of teaching people how to use the mind through visualization and conditioning things to set themselves up for success in the future. And I guess, what are some of the tools beyond just picking up something heavy and feeling that primal feeling that you get when you do that, that you found have consistently added ability or value to men's lives?
Well, on one hand, a lot of the things you're talking about could be considered pride. Pride in your body, pride in the way you carry yourself, proud in your handshake. When you look at somebody, you're undeniable, meaning I'm here and I'm proud to be here. That's beautiful. That's great. But it also, as men need women, there has to be the balance. And if that balance is not there, you're going to suffer. The other side is humility. And if we don't cultivate humility, we're going to be humiliated. I know what that feels like.
Me too.
And I found, and this is not just biblical, this is ever present throughout all traditions and all religions, and that is the call to afflict ourselves through fasting. Humble your soul through fasting. And I can't, if all my searching and all my exploring and all my reading and all my trying of various different things, nothing produces that fruit as well as fasting. Just stop eating.
I've done some long fasts.
Yeah.
I intermittent fast most days. I have for 10 plus years, ever since I read The Warrior Diet by Uri Hoffmeckler. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but the long, and that's cool and everything. And that's very valuable. And it's nice to know, hey, I'm just not going to eat most of the day. And then when I do, I'm going to really enjoy that food. But there is a very special thing that happens around the end of day three, where you've been having these pains and you've been having these calls, and it's just like, eat. And you say, no, eat. No, you're hungry. It doesn't matter. I've committed. I'm going to do this. And then the hunger kind of goes away. And your body just sort of relents, or your mind, or whatever combination of forces that's been calling out to you to put some food in your face, it kind of goes quiet. Maybe it's day three, maybe it's day four. That seems to be right around the window. And then you're in this space where you don't have that happening. And you realize, oh my word, how much shit has been rattling around in my head that's just been calling out to me and making demands of me. And I've been listening to it, or I've been battling with it. And when that goes away, you realize that's a lot of what I've been spending my time on.
Yeah.
And when you have that freedom, it's a very spiritual place to be in. I mean, I've had sort of like, you know, I've done psychedelic drugs, but fasting is the only thing I've ever done that has put me in a similar place where I'm just like that all day. I'm looking out at the world and it's sort of just swimming in potential, and I'm quiet and still inside. And I ask myself, what do I want, or what do I need? Mm-hmm. What is my thing I need to do now? And it's quiet in there. There's not a lot of conflicting voices. It's just, Chance, you need to do this. And when you spend time in that space and fasting, you get to know that voice. It's always there, but it's not screaming for your attention. The truth doesn't need to scream for your attention. It's ever present. And when you learn to recognize the voice that speaks the truth to you, it's a very beneficial thing because you're not going to not eat forever. Mm-hmm. And when you come back to the food, a lot of those voices and a lot of those calls are going to come back to you and say, hey, over here, hey, over here, hey, over here. But if you've listened to the truth and learned to recognize it, no, you orient your ship, you steer your ship in the direction you know you're supposed to go. And to be honest, I'll do a long fast every year, if not more than once a year. I like it quarterly. Sometimes I don't do it that way, but that's what I like to do. And so I guess through that, I just want to add my own recommendation that fasting is an incredibly powerful and empowering experience, and you will get to know the truth inside of you. And prayer is a thing I want to maybe have a little back and forth on, because I tell people this and they look at me kind of weird, but I talk to God all day. I find myself in a state of prayer often. I throw it up. I say, hey, you know, and to be honest, I talk to God in a way that most people would find quite controversial. I treat him like he's my friend, and I talk to him like I would talk to a close friend, except with a little more respect. But I have a dialogue going on all day, and guess what? I get answers. And maybe that's just a piece of myself answering myself, or maybe it really is God speaking right to me. And it's not like I'm some prophet out here proselytizing the future of the world or anything. It's just like, no, man, I need some guidance in my life, and I'm going to ask for it. And then suddenly I have an answer. And sometimes I really have to think about it and be quiet and be still and listen. But I guess, is there any sort of process or any sort of recommendations along those lines or experiences that you feel like could elucidate the power or the practice of prayer?
Well, I would like to just touch on that speaking to God. It's crazy because there's so many voices. How do we know which is which? And I'm having this conversation, but am I speaking with God or to one of my demons? And just to kind of wrap up our talk on fasting, and this is scriptural, that if you want real prayer and communion with God, you have to have an empty stomach. Because I don't know if that be stolen from the night. Are you there? It looks like you froze.
Yeah, I froze for a second, but I think we're back.
I've wanted to know for so long, how am I going to talk to God? And where is this voice of God? I couldn't hear clearly until I emptied my stomach so that my ears could open. Because when we're that humbled, there's, you know, and especially when we get past the third day and the anger is gone and the angriness is gone, then there's nothing but just silence. It really is pure silence. So it's not the baked beans talking. There's something else there. So it's funny because I'm looking, I gave a talk third Tuesday in one of my programs about prayer, meditation, prayer, mantra. It's training of the mind. And since I started fasting earlier this year, I was attracted back to my Christian faith. I had been exploring, and I was Christian once when I was in college, and then I went looking. And then when the Lord asked me to fast, I know why. Because as soon as I started fasting, it was like, okay, Elliot, and I was being led. He said, I need you to go and look into the ascetic practices of the fathers of the early church. He wanted me to go back to the primal church, like first century, second century, fourth century monks and the teachers. And I'm eating this stuff up. I'm loving it. I'm like, wow, I didn't realize Christianity had this kind of mystical root. These guys were, they dedicated themselves to the Lord. Fasting, prayer, everything that they could do. one of the tools that I discovered through ascetic Christendom, where these guys would, they would discipline themselves, comes from their desire to fulfill Paul's obligation of unceasing prayer. You shall pray without ceasing. Now, what the heck does that mean? And so in their wisdom, they created a tiny little prayer over and over and over again, so that it could be said by the lips, but said so much so that it implants itself in the heart. And the claim is that you then become a living prayer. The prayer is called the Jesus Prayer. You may or may not have heard of it, but it's very simple. It goes, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. And you can practice it just by saying it randomly all day long when there's nothing else in your mind. Just fill yourself up with it. You can practice it by breathing it in. Each inhale, Lord Jesus Christ. Exhale, have mercy on me. You can use a prayer rope if you'd like. The whole point is that this is a technology. This is a way to transform the mind, transform the whole heart, that I knew about because I was deep into Eastern religion and I was doing mantras and I was doing affirmations and, you know, the things that the Buddhists do. And I thought that stuff made sense. And I understood what was happening to the brain when they did that. I didn't know that the fathers of the early church recognized the technology of salvation through continuous prayer by giving us this gift of the simple one-line Jesus prayer. So that has been my practice these days, is to bring my mind and my emotions, which have a tendency to go in all different directions and ways, and just simply redirect back to Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. No judgment about my thoughts, nothing to spawn me to action. I'm a person that takes action, so ideas come to me and I want to take action. I've discovered that I waste a lot of time that way because it's not God telling me, it's usually my ego. So I let the thoughts come and I say, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. If I want to know if an action is to be taken, I just say, not by my will, but by thine. And that is so freeing, so peaceful. And I know it works. There's a really good book. It's an old, old book written by Russian Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox Christian Russian monks from like the 9th century called The Pilgrim's Way. And in the book, it recounts the story of a young man who wants to know God, and he meets the teachers, which are, you know, it's some of the saints from the early church. There were these teachers. And one of the teachers tells him, pray this prayer continuously, and you'll know the secret to praying without ceasing. And in the story, you can watch the transformation in the young man's heart, and you can see how his mind changes, his heart changes. He does nothing else. Well, he does a few other things, but really the foundation of what's causing the transformation in his character, in his heart, in his mind, is this constant redirection of the mind, right? The mind, which is so distracted, to the simple one-line mantra. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me.
There's a profound truth in what you just talked about, and I'm tempted just to let people figure it out, but I don't want to. I just want to say it, which is what you think about dictates what you do. The thoughts that you harbor dictate the actions that you act. Mm-hmm. And we all have repeating thoughts. Mm-hmm. There are themes in our lives that repeat over and over again. And much of the world that we live in is messages broadcast repeatedly.
Yeah.
And it's, if you step back, if you have fasted, if you have spent any significant time meditating or in prayer, if you step away from the digital domain, for example, for some time, a week, a month, if you, no computer, no TV, no none, no phone, when you come back to it, it's a very bizarre thing because you've experienced this state where none of that happened. And then you come back to a place where it is happening again and you go, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
This is not healthy for me. This is not a good thing. And then you look out at the world and you see the manifestations of those messages. Whether or not you want to use the Jesus prayer, I'm speaking to you now, audience, whether you want to use the Jesus prayer or some other thing, I'll leave that up to you. I'll let you decide whether you want to follow in Elliot's example or you want to do your own exploring or whatever, but you should be very cognizant of the fact that the thoughts you harbor lead to the things that you do. And if you're harboring negativity, you're going to be a negative force in the world. If you are harboring peace and harmony and love, you're going to act that way in the world too. And actions never stop at the end of your finger. They project out into the world and they affect the people around you. And you can't force another person to think a certain thought, but you present them with the thought and then they are forced to contend with it. The people that you expose yourself to and your thoughts to, they then must contend with the thoughts or accept the thoughts that you've just shown them. And I guess I just wanted to make that clear in case somebody wasn't listening to what you're saying. Be careful about the things that you think and find something that you know to be true and return to it. Return to your center. Mm-hmm. I guess beyond that, man, we're kind of closing in on our appointed time here. And there are a couple of things that I'd like to do. Okay. I would like to, if you've got a little more time, because I'm finding a lot of value in this.
Yeah, let's do it.
That sort of shifts my thoughts here for a second. One question I have here. I know that you say, or you have said, that it's very important to you to be teaching men how to be men. But I'm curious, if you have any thoughts that you'd care to share or advice that you'd care to share with the women who listen to this podcast in regards to how they might support their men in becoming more of the men that they were meant to be. Because I'm sure you've had conversations aplenty with your own wife and with the men who have come to you in marriages that are struggling or relationships that are struggling. And I wonder if there's anything you have to offer to the women out there who would like to be able to do a better job of supporting their husbands or their partners in becoming the men that they are meant to be.
Well, I'll begin once again with the fact that men must go first. And I cannot blame a woman for not wanting to be led by a man who's weak. And I understand their resistance against following the dictate that the man is the head of his wife. I wouldn't want to do it if I were you, given the case that most men are weak, right? So we have to start with men. Why? Anyway, but I understand why women, there are many different reasons why women don't want to follow men. But one of them is men are not as trustworthy as we could be. We're not as strong as we could be. So why follow a weakling? Sex addicted, easily manipulated, weak men. That being said, when it comes to women, particularly in this haughty age where women are, it's really a shame because what they've been fed as liberation and strong independentness is really slavery fed to them in a pretty rapid. What do I mean by that? Well, someone's going to be your lord. Someone's going to be your head. As a woman, I'm talking to in particular. And women get their so-called power today from the government. The government has destroyed our families by making divorce easy. So there's no need to work out our stuff. And they've also given benefit and bonus to women for leaving their husbands. Welfare, the divorce laws, they call it divorce rape. So women understand that your strong independentness doesn't come from nature or from God, from Lord of this world, your government, welfare. So I say that not to bring women down, but to put them in the same place I find myself when I say, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. There needs to be a sense of humility. There are parts of the world where women cover their head out of a sign of humility. There are parts of the world where women cover up their face and everything else. I'm not saying go there, but it stems from this necessity for women to humble themselves in the home, the presence, and under the leadership of a man that they've chosen to be their husband. This is paramount. We will not get anywhere because we're constantly going to be contending with one another. Women and the secularized world does not like anything that smells like hierarchy. But that's not God's way. There is a hierarchy. That's why we look up. So this whole egalitarian circle that we're trying to create, I say it's like a vagina, and it's not going to work that way. It needs to go in order this way. If we continue to try to pretend like we're all equal and that there's this circle that we're, and that my wife is my partner, and that we're both the leaders, there's going to be strife. There's going to be confusion. Now, I understand in this world of emasculated men and hypermasculine women, you got relationships where the woman is the alpha. If that's working, I have no judgment. Family's working out well. Your husband's happy. You're happy. This is the way it should be. Fine. But I don't believe it's the natural order. And I don't believe it's the best way. When women ask what I think they should do or how they should be, I can only point to my experience with good women in my life, my mother and my wife. And I see how they are. The way my mother is with my father, the way my wife is with me. And these are by no means weak women. My mother's not a weak woman, but my father's an alpha male. My wife, Freudian slip, not a weak woman. She, in fact, carries a lot of masculine characteristics that I don't. One of the masculine characteristics is like, she's the accountant, let me put it that way. You know, thinking about numbers and working with like she's better at science and math than me. That's of a more of a masculine bent mind. That just happens to be the way she is. Part of the reason why I married her is because she used to do my math homework. She's not a weak woman. She's not a dumb woman, but she's a humble woman, as is my mother. There are times, particularly with my mother, where she can't stand my father. But she still, at the end of the day, humbles herself and knows and trusts that he'll lead the way because he's a strong man. So when it comes to some of the things that are just very basic, look, if you're getting married, my belief is if you're getting married, it means you want a family. I don't understand getting married just so you can have a fuck buddy. I don't understand why these people do this. Now, if you can't have children, that's a different story. But people get married just so they, I don't know why. But if you're going to get married, you're going to have a family. That's the whole point. If you're going to have a family, you're going to have a home. Men don't need homes. Women need homes. They need a nest. Men are nomads. That's our nature. We're okay. The only reason why I have a home is because I have a wife and I have children. And in order to have this home, there needs to be a homemaker. There needs to be a lord of the house. My wife is a lord of the house. She keeps it in order. She cooks the food. She cares for the family. That's a very, very important job. But in our day and age, you have women who are wanting to be the man, and rather than humbling themselves and caring for the family and caring for the kids get carted off to daycare, and mom has to go out there and battle it in the corporate world. And now we're seeing it, I see it with young couples now, where the mom is the Instagram star. She's got to get out there, and she's got to... And the things that I see some moms wearing to be Instagram stars, I'm like, I couldn't imagine having my wife flaunt and display herself like that so that she can make the money from social media. There's no way. It's so backwards.
Yeah.
So you have these women that want to go out there and they want to, and it's pride and it's haughtiness and it's a complete disregard for the family. And it's an affront. It's degradation to their own value as women. Your value as a woman, you provide something that we could never as men ever do. We can't. That's why we're better together. We don't have the wiring. We don't have the plumbing. We can't do it, but you're perfect for it. But that in our world is seen as below them, beneath. You're just a mom. You're just a wife, a flunky. This is so wrong. It's so backwards. It's ridiculous. And the same thing goes with the man. To be a husband and to be a father, I say, is the head of the family because we're stronger. The buck stops with us. We take the brunt of the responsibility. As such, we are the servants in the home as well. I don't need this big house. I don't need all these things. And I serve my family by sacrificing to have a home and to put food on the table. And so I'm a servant in that way too, or the man is a servant in that way. But if that is taken away from us, because mama's the breadwinner, mama don't need your money, mama don't need no man, mama can divorce you and take all your money. Mama can go to the state. Then men, just like women are robbed of their dignity as women and mothers and wives, men are robbed of their dignity as providers and protectors. So we suffer.
A lot of the stuff you're talking about here, I just want to be, you know, honest with the people who listen to this. That's a big part of what I'm about. And, you know, I'm figuring a lot of this stuff out in my own life too. My wife and I are, I mean, we've been married for 11 years, but I was a big fuck up, and it has severely curtailed a lot of opportunities that I might have otherwise had, because I'm a smart guy and I've got a lot of talents, but I spent them for a long time doing myself and the world around me a great disservice. And I'm trying to build myself to the point where I can live my life where my wife does not have to work, but she does now. And there's a part of her that really enjoys it because she enjoys what she does and she works with good people. But there's also a part of her, and we've talked about this, that laments the fact that she can't be here in the home with the kids more often than she is. And I lament that as well. It's an abiding sadness in my life. And that's not to say that I don't respect the things that my wife does, because she's a very smart, strong, and capable person. And the work that she does is important to hundreds of people. And I respect that, but I'm trying to build myself and my world. And there's a lot of things about myself that I have conquered. And now I'm conquering the let's bring the wealth into this family game. And that's one of my strong focuses right now that I've built the foundation. But, you know, I've been nodding along with a lot of what you have said, but I just want to express that it's not always the case that it can be like that right now. And even if you recognize the truth in what you're talking about, Elliot, you have to, like I talked about before, if you have that goal to get to the point where you are the sole breadwinner, and you're not there and that's not feasible for you, you have to figure out what those steps are going to be. And then you have to start taking steps there. And that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at now. I want to be able to provide that for my wife, but I can't yet. And it pisses me off, to be frank, you know, because I know the potential that I have. And so I'm building my life in a way that I can do that. And I just wanted to say that because I know there are many, many families out there who are in a similar position where if it was just me and my job right now, it would not cut it. It would not pay for our lives. And it would not provide the kind of life that I demand of myself to have for my family. And part of that is, you know, we got married young and we lived lives in a way that was sort of not mastering our mammon, so to speak. And now we're paying the cost plus interest on a lot of that shit. And part of that is we have three kids. We have this life that now we are committed to that is expensive in this world that we live in. So I just wanted to say that to sort of offer the idea to those who are listening. Look, if you can't live that way right now, okay. Maybe you made some mistakes. Maybe you're just coming to this realization or whatever, but you have to keep that goal in mind. And then you have to figure out the things that are going to get you there. And then you have to actually do those things. And coming from a person who's trying to work that out, I just want to say to you, you can do it because I've seen a lot of success and rapid success. Once I decided I'm going to step out and lead in this way, the doors open up to you, you know, knock and it shall be opened unto you. And that's true. And I just wanted to say that just because sometimes people can hear a message like the one that you just delivered and then it can eat at them because they feel like, well, that's not me and I'm not living the way I'm supposed to do. And now I'm just going to go self-sabotage some more. And it's like, no, man, that's what got you there. Wake up to the fact that you're not living in the way that you want to, and then figure out how to get there. And I just feel like that's important to say for those who, like myself, are not able to live in that order. And so I guess there's that. And is there anything you have to offer along those lines for maybe somebody like me who, okay, you know, I definitely want to be the head there, but I can't yet.
Well. I think what you're talking about is really, really important to begin with first. I have to come clean. I am a wretched soul. I've got demons attacking me day and night. I've made a lot of bad mistakes. I'm listening to you talk about the setbacks that have caused things that may have been, would have been here now, aren't there yet. Well, I've got three daughters too. I've got four children. I'm deeply in debt. I got myself out of debt. I got back into debt. Stupid things. I am not where I want to be on all fronts. By the grace of God, I started having sex, fornication, at the age of 15 with my wife, or a girl from the next town, and God protected us in that relationship to get to this point where I can speak with conviction about the value of family in this way, traditional family. But it's not a fruit of my righteousness. Grace alone. And that's why I say, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me, because I made a lot of bad mistakes and I am paying for them now. But as you say, you can be born again any day. And when you make that choice and you get out the way, the path unfolds in front of us. Now, I say that's important, that part about getting out of the way, because if you're anything like me and you see what you want to be and you're not there yet, there's a whole lot of self-flagellation. Man, I'm fucked up. What am I going to do? I'm so far behind. How am I going to catch up? I'll never do it. And all that judgment, that's where lies. Once we repent, meaning I fucked up, I was wrong, I won't do it again, I'm going to set it right. That alone, just that confession alone, opens up the door for God to pave a way for you. And it is as good as already done. You wanting to be the sole provider and head of your family, it's done. It's a done deal. It'll slow down if you beat yourself up and you try to make it happen. All right? I'm a willful, prideful guy. I want to go and try to make it happen. I get it. We all are, man. But I've had to, you know, I turned 40 this year, and going into this second half of my life, I've realized that I cannot do it all, and I must relinquish my will to the will of the Lord. And He has not let me down this far. The blessings beyond blessings that I even asked for have come into my life. So I have to sit in that confidence that I find myself in predicaments that I don't like. You know, I have one of my daughters turned a teenager. They say it's not going to be easy when your daughter, when your children turn teenagers. And I'm of the conviction that it could be easy, and it could have been easy had I led the most righteous path up until this point. But I see all the darkness in her, and I can't help but blame myself. Why did I do that? Why didn't I remember this? And I want to go back and I want to fix it because my daughter's suffering now. So I rest in the peace of knowing that I am called by the Lord and He's working a healing on my family. And once I've made that assertion and given the reins over, I've begun to see how this healing is unfolding. I'm watching it happen in my heart first and in my way first and then through my children. But it'll take time. As far as advice is concerned for how to be the head of the family, right? Because we can get into the semantics of it. It's less important what to do, and it's more important who we become. And you have to ask yourself, not how do I assert myself as a man over my wife, or how do I make more money so that I can have the frame of leadership in my home. Those things will come when we get this right first. And so I have to ask myself questions like, where have I been out of integrity? Where have I been overindulgent? Right? This is one that I was exploring in myself yesterday. I'm like, why am I in so much debt? I'm like, I got out of debt. That was my big claim to fame. I had all this debt. I got out of debt. The Lord pulled me through. And I got arrogant and got myself back into a bunch of unnecessary debt. I had to confront my self-indulgence, my pride. I'm in debt, but still, me and my wife are spending $200 a week on eating out for date night. I had to check that in myself. I'm like, wait a second. I wonder why I'm in debt. I spend lavishly on myself. In not to say that spending on yourself isn't good, but in a way that is above and beyond what is necessary to be who I'm called to be in this world. I bought a dumb car. I bought a freaking Tesla, $100,000 car. I last year, I had it for 1 year, last December, I got rid of it. I had to repent. I looked at it. I looked at myself. I had to see myself for what I am. Like, this is the dumbest thing ever. Why am I doing this? Demons upon demons. Hmm. So you repent, you make it right on the inside first. I said, I had to acknowledge, I had to confess. You know, the Lord says that if you confess and all, anything that you confess, you come out with it first. You got to write it down or confess it to someone. Speak it out loud to yourself, but just acknowledge, hey, you're not right. And allow the Lord to help you get right. That being said, if what you're wanting is more abundance in your life, more of a righteous role in your family, don't try to go do it. That's the last thing you want to do. You don't want to go do that. You want to line up with what or who is the kind of person that has that, that is that. There's a really good saying by Robert Moore, the author of King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, where he talks about, you know, the quadrated psyche, you know, the cross. You live on the cross, king, warrior, magician, lover. You also have spiritual, mental, emotional, physical. I mean, there's the four quadrants. But all talk of the king is talk of spirituality. And he says that the king does not create order. A lot of people think that, you know, I'm going to be a king in my life, so I'm going to go and I'm going to order stuff. I'm going to make things the way they should be. Right? I mean, this is normal, sure. Right? Oh, I'm going to be a king now, so I'm going to go. He says, that's not how it works. He says, where the king is, order shall ensue. Bow. Where the king is, order will ensue. The world takes order around you. We don't order the world. We become.
Alignment. Yeah. You know, there are these moments in this podcast, and I try to always have these moments, but, you know, I feel like we got to a point where I connected with your heart right there, you know, because I kind of opened up, hey man, you know, we can talk about these things, but here's where I'm at. And you said, hey man, we can talk about these things, but here's where I'm at. And I'm grateful that you have that honesty within you to be able to share like that, because, you know, it's part of what holds a lot of men back is the inability to admit to their mistakes. Pride is a motherfucker. It really is. And from my perspective, and it kind of sounds like for you too, I have an inclination towards just a massive ego, but I've just fucked myself up so many times that it's very easy for me now to go, well, look, man, the reason I have this lesson to share with you is because I learned it the hard way. I learned everything the hard way until just the last couple of years, man. So that's why I have these lessons. And the reason that I know that they're true is because I've seen the other side of this equation, and it ain't pretty, man. You don't want to live that life. You don't want to see your friends dying. You don't want to die. You don't want to go to jail. You don't want to be a slave to all the things that are out there trying to enslave you. And you talked about that when we were talking about the women, but I think part of the reason fasting helps you clear so many of those voices out is because food is of this world, and this world tends to have the desire to wrap you up in its tentacles and shackle you and make you a slave to its desires, whether it's the media or the government or whatever it is out there. The opposition does not want you to spread those wings and take flight. It wants to wrap you up in chains and suck you dry. And if you can learn the character of those things in your life, if you can be honest about the things, and that's hard to do, because for me, I had to turn around and look at 15 years of being just a fool and say, I have to own this now. And now it's not easy. And it didn't happen all at once. I had to take it piece by piece, and I had to keep breaking my own rules until I learned what my rules were and I fully accepted this is my responsibility. These are the things that I've done. These are the people that I've hurt. What can I do now to justify the life I've already lived? And it's to take those lessons that I've learned, is to take the example that I set and to say, that's not who I'm going to be. I'm going to be this way now. I used to be that way. I'm this way now. And once you embody that, just like you said, if you embody that, if you know your principles and you align yourself and commit yourself to say, I'm going to be this way, you will have a tendency to be that way. And sure, you're going to fall off again. And then you realign and you say, I'm going to be this way. And I'm sorry that I did that. I was wrong. Forgive me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to share maybe one more little anecdote about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very humble in that way. I'm the most humble, I like to tell people. But in a way, I really am one of the most humble because I've made so many mistakes. I mean,
yeah.
And owning that, it's like, okay, well, here I am. And maybe I'll have a disagreement with my wife and I'll say something. And I shouldn't have said that. I knew I shouldn't have said it, and it came out of my mouth. And then you see the pain that you caused the person that you love the most. Well, you know what? I'm sorry about that. And usually immediately for me, or within like a minute, okay, you know what? I'm sorry about that. Here's the reasons why I think that I was wrong. Here's what I noticed in you. Here's the reasons that I said that. It's not an excuse. I'm just letting you know who I am and where I was when I said that, but I was wrong and I'm sorry. And it's not quite so easy for my wife to do that at this point. And that's okay because I love her and she always does come to that point, but she gets pissed at me sometimes because we'll be in an argument and there's that part of a person, me, you, her, you want to fight. You know, there's that fight. We started the fight. I'm going to fucking finish the fight. All right. And, and then I'll be like, look, you're right. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. And maybe you shouldn't have said the things that you said afterwards, but I instigated this problem. And then she'll kind of like, you can't just like do that. Because I'm busy fighting you. It's like, well, okay, but I'm not fighting you now. So you can't have a fight with me. You can say stuff to me, but I know where you're coming from and I understand. And I've already forgiven you. We're good. And then it comes back. And that's maybe to tie that full circle. That's the kind of leadership that I'm grateful to be able to exhibit in my own life. I can forgive. I can admit that I'm wrong. And then I can move on and do the right thing in that next moment. And that's something that I'm grateful. I wouldn't say proud, but I'm grateful that I have within me is the ability to do that. And I'm grateful to you for allowing me to communicate that in this conversation organically, because this is the kind of stuff that a lot of people maybe gloss over in the conversation. You know, I was excited to talk to you because you're an interesting character. And there's a lot of people who look up to you, and I was, you know, I've seen your stuff, but I always try to get to know a person on a real level. And I feel like I got there with you, and I'm grateful for that. And I unless you have anything else to say, that's kind of where I'd like to leave off the conversation and kind of come in and close this up.
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, let's do the traditional stuff. I have two little things I do. Mm-hmm. Number one is, there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast, not millions or anything, but there's a lot. And let's imagine that there's a young man sitting in front of you and he's been listening to this podcast and he says, Elliot, I really like what you had to say. I like the idea of strengthening the body to help strengthen the mind and strengthen the spirit and master my emotions. I like the idea of being a leader in my home and creating a family and walking out into the world with the knowledge that I'm doing that. I like the idea of living in alignment with my purpose and discovering my purpose, but I'm totally lost right now, man. I don't do any of those things. If that guy was sitting right in front of you, what are one or two things that you would tell him? Start this right now today, because it would give you the most bang for your buck to begin right here.
I'm a lot like you with my pride. And the world loves pride. I became famous on YouTube because of my sense of pride and my assertion that you should be proud too. You can do it. You're the man. Go make it happen. Hustle. Crush it. Sleepless nights. It doesn't matter what it takes. Grind till you bleed. You're gonna get there. That sounds really, really good. But where I find myself today, I can't offer that any longer. Because I've seen how feeble it really is. And again, I don't know this young man, but if they're anything like me, asking for help from above is the first place to start. You know, I have a program called King's Transformation, and it's about helping men become kings in their lives. I also spoke about the four quarters of what makes us whole: spirit, mind, emotion, body. If you're going to go right to the root and you want to get the best bang for your buck, you start in the spirit with the king, the unmanifest. Kanye West just came out with a new album called Jesus is King. I don't know if you listen to it, but I love Kanye. I love him even more now because Kanye's given me the confidence to say Jesus is King. I couldn't do it before. I wasn't strong enough. I was too afraid of people's judgments. I was too afraid of looking like a hypocrite. So I have to deliver to you what I have for you today. And in your own way, and whatever it means to you, give up your life, give up your will, give up your way, and seek the way of the Father. In the Bible it says, seek my way and all will be given to you. I really believe that. Seek my way and my kingdom and the doors will be open to you. Commune with the Holy Spirit. Ask the perfect man. I made a living making YouTube videos under the popular phrase, be the strongest version of yourself, right? Be the strongest version of yourself. Me and all my pride and me being the strongest version of myself and telling you you can do the same. Well, it's something you and I both agree on here, and we've been talking about, is that I am not the strongest version of myself. I got demons upon demons knocking at my door. And I know that I'm not perfect and I can't do it alone. Throughout all cultures, throughout all times, men were given a rites of passage, an initiation into the physicality of being a man. There's always a challenge, but also into the story, the mythology, the religion that's associated with being a man. In the West, we've got Jesus, the Christ, the perfect one. Whatever judgment you have about it, feelings you have about it, the whole idea, if you want to be logical about it, it's good for men who work in a hierarchy, not like women, to have a perfect man to look up to and say, help me, right? If you had a perfect mentor. The beautiful thing about Jesus is that he's not breathing down your throat. He's not farting. He's not bleeding. He's not eating. He's not showing how nasty he is as a man in front of you, right? He's not here physically. So you can't judge. You can only hold the perfect image of what the perfect man would be. The Christ itself, the strongest version of what a man could be. And know that you could be that too. If I just give up my prideful ways and trying to make things happen and ask for help, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. You gotta have faith. Because if we walk in our own ways, we're gonna try to do it. And it can lead us down some dark paths, both you and I know. The faith is not so much, do I believe in God or believe in Jesus, but am I willing to let go and allow my steps to be carried for me? Can I allow, as it says in the Bible, him to be a light unto my feet, be a light unto my feet, show me where my feet are and where I'm going. A light unto my feet literally means down here, on the feet, or around my feet, not up there, not over there. I got caught up in astrology because I want to know what's up or there, what's coming up. God doesn't promise that. He says, I'll be a light in front of each other. Ooh, I can see. Ooh, I can see. Ooh, I can see. And begin there.
People who know me know how much what you're talking about resonates with the things I talk about and try to teach people. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. We're walking, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. And that's great advice. And I hope people have heard your words. And that brings me to kind of my final little thing. And this one kind of throws people sometimes, but here we go. Two questions. What is one question you suggest people ask of themselves? And what's one question that you suggest people ask of other people?
Well, the rabbit hole began for me with the question, who am I? I mean, I think that's basically the starting point for everyone. Who am I? What is this all about? There are a lot of draws pulling for our attention. You're this or you're that, and you should be doing this and you should be doing that. And all of the meaning given in the world. You need to pay taxes. You need to eat food. You need to have sex. You need to do all these things. But if we stop all of that, ignore all of that, pretend none of that is actually true, there's a sense of freedom that's associated with being you. We're not bound by anything here. It's all a figment of our imagination. God's grace has put me in a unique position for the world to watch as this transforms and is many different things. I'm boundless, so I allow myself to evolve, but it's because I'm constantly asking the question, who am I? Along with that comes what's expected of me. If I know I'm this, then how should I live my life? It's not good enough to know. I'm of the conviction that when you're called to the Lord, you're a seed of Abraham. If you're one of Abraham's sons, one of his children, in the spiritual sense, then there is a responsibility and a way to be. You weren't just called for no reason. Now that you know who you are, you got to do it. You got to be it. Otherwise, what's the point? That's like saying, hey, you know you could be perfect. You could be the strongest version of yourself. Do you know that? And here's an image of it. This is what it might be like. Now, are you willing or not? And that's really where we find ourselves. And we struggle. I struggle. A question to ask others? I don't know. I don't know, because I think any question that I come up with means that I probably have a right answer and that I'm going to begin judging and evaluating. So I don't want the answer. I think maybe the question is, who are you? Who am I? Who are you? And anything that you tell me about who you are pales into comparison to who you really are anyway. Hmm. So it's kind of a dumb question. You say that that's who you are, but there's a whole lot more, I'm sure. Hmm.
That's very interesting. That's maybe the most interesting answer I've gotten to that second half of that. That's worth pondering over. But while I do, let me thank you for taking the time to have this conversation and for kind of going a little beyond what you might have originally intended. I appreciate you making room to do that, because I feel like there's a lot in this conversation that is going to be very valuable to at least a certain percentage of the people who hear it, because I know people come to this podcast because they know that I'm going to try to extract some of these things from my guests. And I think you knocked it out of the park, man. And I want to thank you for coming, and I want to thank your wife for helping to set it up. And I want to thank our pal John for helping me to open the door. And I'd like to give you the chance to shout out anybody you want to do, or to promote anything that you're doing, or to tell people where they can find you when they're interested in learning more about what you do and who you are.
Well, I think the easiest thing you can do is just follow me on Instagram if you want to see what I'm doing, and go to elliotholst.com.
And from there, they can just find whatever they're looking for?
Yep, step into my universe.
Well, cool, man. If you're good, I'm good.
I'm good, brother. All is okay. Good.
In that case, this has been the Logos and Trivial Podcast. I've been Chance Lunsford. He's been Elliot Hulse. And this has all been allegedly, and we're out.